Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So we told you about that story yesterday. The citrus industry booming. Booming, but maybe for all the wrong reasons. Someone in South Africa hid about 75 million rand worth of cocaine in oranges and shipped it off to the United Kingdom. Well, we wanted to understand a little bit more about this story. So who better than Chad Thomas? He's CEO of IRS Forensic Investigations. Good morning, Chad. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I'm good, and you?
I am good. Thank you. So just talk to us. But you know, we South Africans have always known this, hey? I mean, didn't we go to rugby matches with alcohol in our nachis? I mean, didn't we do this? Didn't we lead the way in this regard?
So yeah, look, on a serious note, we did. You're right, nachis, watermelons, injected with vodka. But on a very serious note,
no, absolutely.
This particular case is just very indicative of how international organized crime syndicates are using South Africa as a staging point in respect of their international transshipment and transnational narco dealing. Now, if we rewind all the way back to the 1970s, one of the most famous cases that was exposed in America, specifically in New York City, was called Pizzagate. And that was when heroin was coming in disguised as tinned tomatoes that would then be used in the different pizzerias. It was actually distributed to the different pizzerias who in turn then distributed to the dealers in those particular areas. South Africa, however, has taken it far further. When one looks at the case in Australia about 2 years ago, an entire bulldozer was shipped from South Africa to Australia, and when x-rayed by the Australian authorities, it was found jam-packed with bricks of cocaine.
Wow.
So it's becoming the norm that South Africa is regarded as this massive transshipment point. The use of drugs in South Africa has always been a concern, but the amount of drugs passing through South Africa is even of greater concern because it far outnumbers the local use.
So so we're getting quite good at this. Quite imaginative, aren't we?
I would say organized crime figures are ingenious. I mentioned to you the last time we chatted how adept forces are to change, and the same applies to all organized crime figures. When one looks at cocaine, for example, it's been used where it's been liquefied and it's been sent out in bottles of wine. We've seen clothes that have been exported that have been washed in a liquid containing cocaine. We've seen in the old days with the heroin that was moving via Sicily, it was actually molded into statues, religious iconic statues that were then exported to other countries. When one looks at the border between America and Mexico and you see the ingenuity of the way drugs are packaged and moved across the border, it's no surprise that those different techniques are now being used in South Africa, which is now being regarded, sadly, as a port of origin for a lot of the world's narcotics.
So what happens? Just explain to me, because it's not produced here, right?
Not produced here. We're a transshipment point. We're a transshipment point for cocaine that comes via South America, and we're a transshipment point for heroin that goes via Lahore to Dar es Salaam, to Maputo, and then by road through to South Africa. It's packaged either in Witbank or Johannesburg, the heroin, and the cocaine, which comes in by sea, is generally packaged either in Saldanha, Cape Town. We've seen it as far as Port Elizabeth and Durban. And it's packed in the ports, and it doesn't leave those port areas. So it shows a very sophisticated syndicate that obviously has ties to the authorities that are within the port authorities. But the quantities we're talking are significant.
Yeah, and so where is the best place to stop this? Is it on import, on, I don't know, repackaging, or is it the export, or does it all have to work together?
Port of entry. So we've become an origin point for countries such as Australia, New Zealand, England, and certain European countries for narcotics. They regard us as the port of origin because it arrived packaged from South Africa, but obviously we got it from elsewhere. So that is why it's so important to beef up our border security. If we take drugs out of the equation for a second and look at the explosives that have been used in the ATM bombing, the majority of them are coming across the Beitbridge border. We hear on a weekly basis how explosives are found being smuggled across the border. Now, this is what's being found, the same with illicit cigarettes that have been smuggled across the Zimbabwean border. So if this, what we're finding is minute in terms of the bigger picture. We're not taking our border security seriously, whether it's a seaport, whether it's a land port, whether it's an airport. We have to beef up the security of those particular installations. And we've now heard that the border police has been established. And let's hope that this new unit or this new organization that has been established, which is separate to both the police and the SANDF, actually have the teeth and the resources to fight our porous borders.
So it's, and do we have the capacity, do we have the capability of fighting this?
The amount of containers that come into South Africa and the amount of X-ray equipment that's available and actual people on the ground is exceptionally limited. The establishment of this new unit or organization to conduct border policing will go a long way, provided they have money. Now, one looks at the investigation directorate that was established to prosecute state capture and tender fraud. Everybody was very happy about this unit being established, but in their first year, they were only given 100 million rand. Do you and me, 100 million rand sounds like a lot of money, but to fight all the cases involved in state capture and tender fraud, 100 million is minuscule. They landed up at that stage with maybe 11 permanent employees. So we have this wonderful organization that's been established now to police our borders. The issue is, do they have sufficient funds and do they have the resources?
Do they?
I'm hoping they do. I'm hoping that sufficient revenue set aside. But one must understand our tax base is shrinking, inflation is increasing. It's good from an employment perspective that we've got more people on the ground. When one looks at the SANDF, it's one of the biggest employers in the public sector. I think they employ around about 70,000 people. But those 70,000 people aren't capacitated. We've got an Air Force where we can't get our fighter aircraft into the air because there's no budget. So you've got pilots who cost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of rand to train, sitting around Air Force bases. They can't actually go up in their aeroplanes. We can't have the same with Border Patrol agents sitting back because they don't have funding for vehicles, X-ray machines, sniffer dogs, and so on and so forth.
So when we saw the arrest of this wanted Israeli criminal recently, does this talk to the same type of concern that you're discussing?
So when one looks at the cocaine that was found in Australia that was stashed in a bulldozer, when one looks at, and this isn't the first instance of fruit being used as a means to enter transport drugs from South Africa into the UK and into other European countries. We've always seen that there's an element of international cooperation between international syndicates. The guys in South Africa that are involved are lower tier members. The upper tier members of these particular syndicates are foreign nationals. They do come to South Africa because they want to see their product. They want to make sure their products are being cut. They want to make sure that everything is in place. A lot of them then find South Africa very attractive and stay here. Others come here because they're fugitives. But what one finds is there's a spider web. Most international organized crime is in some way linked. And the only time we really talk about organized crime is when they're fighting one another over turf. But what we don't seem to realize is that 9 times out of 10, they're actually cooperating with one another. It stands to reason that they cooperate rather than fight and draw attention to themselves via the law enforcement agencies. And in this particular instance of the Israeli, he had to leave Israel because he had drawn too much attention to himself and his organization due to a turf war with another family. So are they linked? Most probably not directly. But is there a link between all the organized crime syndicates? Most definitely.
And that's where we leave it, Chad Thomas, as always, giving us a very, very solid overview of that situation. It is 8:44. I'm Harold Feldman. Good morning.